Fernando Tatis Jr. is one of the brightest young stars in the game today. A lot of people believe at some point in his career, he's going to be the best player in baseball at some point in his career. And let me ask you this, Damian. When was the last time we talked about Fernando Tatis Jr.? Now, obviously, it's our second show, so we haven't talked about him lately. But when has he come up in conversation?
Well, here's the thing, man. It's like, look at what we're talking about.
That's my point. That's my point. Like, so it's a quote-unquote negative was maybe the first time in a, like maybe a year and a half that we're talking about this guy that is a superstar. Can you imagine if that happened in the NBA? You know, whoever the best, Giannis, that the first time we talked about a Giannis was when he got a technical foul or something like that, or dunked on, you know, somebody when they were up by 40. That was the first time. Come on, man. MLB got it all wrong right now. They got it all wrong.
But it's not just Fernando Tatis, it's baseball.
Like,
I feel like the most that I've talked about baseball is, you know, when we were talking about the labor discussions,
mm-hmm.
when we were talking about them, you know, trying to sort out the giant mess that they had made between March and July. And it appears, you know, based on what we saw yesterday between the Padres and the Rangers, it's no wonder we couldn't get baseball started on time. You've got a group of just absolute children negotiating and arguing with another group of children, and it's absurd. Baseball has got to, they have got to do better than this. They have got to move on from all of this unwritten rule nonsense and take the next step in the evolution of their game.
I agree 100%, man. And you talk about leadership. I don't know if they have the leadership to guide them out of this, to be honest with you.
Bang, right there. That's their biggest issue. They don't have the leadership. You can feel however you want to feel about Roger Goodell, and he pretty much kind of follows what the owners do. As many faults as the NFL has, they haven't found themselves in a hole like this. And even when they have dug themselves out of it.
Right.
I think Adam Silver has navigated the waters like we're looking at a playoff game in the middle of the day in a bubble in which there have been, you know, these guys have been there since, what, July? Like 11th at the latest, 7th at the earliest, and we haven't had any positive tests since they've come out of that quarantine period. Adam Silver and the NBA team deserves to be recognized for that. Rob Manfred, he is not that guy. He is not a guy that takes charge of anything. He's barely even a guy who reacts to anything. I think about the, you know, all of the talk about baseball nets and extending it, you know, down the foul poles. He didn't do anything. He sat on his hands like, oh, I've got to wait, and I've got to talk to people. Meanwhile, ball clubs all around the country were like, yeah, nah, we're good, man. We'll just go ahead and do it on our own. Like, don't worry about it. We got it. Like, we're not going to wait for you. We've got it. There's 6 minutes left, Casey, in this Orlando-Milwaukee game. The Magic, game one, they're up by 11.
I got it. Orlando is... It looked like they're going to get this done in game one. Now, somebody brought up on Twitter earlier, remember Orlando won game one against Toronto last year in the playoffs and ended up getting they lost that series 4-1, and Toronto went on to win the NBA title. So, you know, it's an interesting way to start things, but no hot takes. Let's relax a little bit. No hot takes.
So I'm streaming this game, and apparently I'm an eternity behind. There's
man.
3 minutes left. It's a 13.
Yeah.
Orlando's good. No, you got to correct me. I'm streaming. So I'm in my office. I don't have I'm a streamer, period. So I dumped DirecTV. It was the greatest breakup of my life.
Yeah. DirecTV's trash. Wait a minute. They don't sponsor us, do they?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, well, they're trash.
And I started just streaming everything. So I'm on Hulu here. But the downside to that is, a good, great example, the belly three, what was the line? We deserve this effing game. You remember that?
Yeah.
I had, because I was preparing for a Sacramento Kings podcast when it was over, I had the box score in front of me and I was taking notes. So the game was behind and I looked down at the box score and it changes. And I'm like, oh, all right, well, I'm going to stick around and see how this happens. You know, I did kind of took me out of the moment, but yeah, I'm always a little bit behind on live sporting events because I stream everything, and I'm telling you, man, cutting the cord was, that was such a marvelous
feeling. I'm not there yet. I had a situation where I was almost forced to do it because DirecTV, like, just completely destroyed my whole TV watching experience with a bad box and then bad service. So, make a long story short, I went about 2 months without any cable service. And I got through it, I feel, because sports hadn't come back yet. But, sports is the one thing. Well, you're able to do it, so maybe I'm wrong. But I feel like sports is the one thing that the cord cutters haven't completely figured out. I need my DVR. I don't like to be, you know, because I'm on Twitter when I watch the games, I don't like to be like 15 to 30 seconds behind, nothing like that. So they haven't completely figured that out yet. And I think that's the only thing keeping the cable companies above water right now.
And I think what happens is, like, the stream slows down, like, gradually over time, and you wind up being like, I would, there's less than two. Orlando's going to win this game. Like, that's
33-12 today. Wow.
Orlando is going to win this game. Orlando's going to take game one from Milwaukee. But I think what happens is like, the stream just kind of slows down, not really to anything super noticeable, especially when you're not listening to it. And then you find, like, what was I like? I was like 4 minutes behind.
You were about 4.5 minutes. They got you. They got you, Dane.
It's all right. I just saw, Kobe Bryant Day is coming up, 8/24. Kobe Mama Bryant's Day. Birthday is August 23rd, and Mamba Day is coming up on Monday. The Lakers are going to wear black Mamba uniforms for game four against the Portland Trailblazers.
Are they going to be trailing on game four?
That's exactly what I was going to ask you.
Are they
going to
be down 2-1?
This is kind of the prime moment where, you know, you remember, like, the last thing you saw, it was gorgeous. Like, the last time you saw Portland, like, it was just beautiful and you loved it and it was talking the NBA world. And the last time you saw the Lakers, it was like, maybe not so much, and we're willing to erase everything else and just remember the last thing that we saw. And I think that's what we're doing here with Portland. We all know that Portland is formidable. We all know that they're going to give the Lakers a test, but there's legitimate conversation going into, like what you just said, are the Lakers going to be trailing going into game four? Are people who think the Trailblazers might steal this series from the Los Angeles Lakers? It's like, all right, let's stop. The Lakers are still the best team in the Western Conference, and I've been listening to, you know, NBA people talking about, well, you know, you can't flip the switch. Like, this just, it's not a light switch. You can't flip it on. Yeah, dude, we've seen LeBron do this like 7 times. Yeah. We've seen LeBron James led team flip this. I don't know how he does it, but there's this imaginary switch, whether it's the zero dark 30 gimmick or whatever it is, there is an imaginary switch.
Zero dark 23.
There's something in his head that switches, or there's something in LeBron James led teams that seem to switch. And when the playoffs get here, he gets the job done.
I mean, when you talk about what we last seen and the, you know, going off of that emotion, it kind of worked against, you know, the Blazers, in my opinion, because the way I look at it, the last time I saw them, they looked like they were on E. You know what I'm saying? They looked like they were gassed. And I don't see a situation where they win 4 games against the Lakers. I just don't see that. So people saying that they can win the series, I don't see that happening to this point. I think they're going to be close games. I think that there are advantages that they have offensively that they can take advantage of. I think there's a concern for what, outside of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, what the Lakers are going to be able to bring to the table offensively. But I think at the end of the day, Portland doesn't defend well enough to beat a team as good as the Los Angeles Lakers. And you're not going to outscore them 4 times. Well, I mean, to win a game, literally, you have to outscore them. But you're not going to do it all on offense 4 times against a team as good as the Lake Show, man. So, yeah, I don't see them winning, but I can't see them being pushed.
Yeah, it's a fun story. We can enjoy it. Like, my feeling was Portland, in terms of the teams that were really competing for those 8th and 9th spots, Phoenix, I think, would have given us an entertaining series. I don't think they would have won a game, but I think they would have given an entertaining series. Out of all of the teams that were really competing for the 8th and 9th, I only think one team was actually going to win games, and it's the one we got. It's the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah.
I'm not as in love. I said yesterday, I will never doubt Dame Lillard again, and I'm not doubting him. But I'm also not going to start doubting LeBron James right now, and I'm not going to start doubting his chemistry that he clearly has with Anthony Davis. And you talk about the concerns on the offensive end, justifiable concerns. But if you get those two going, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. History says, you know, you look back at the run that got Portland in this position. C.J. McCollum's game in the play-in game really, really stands out. But there was never a situation where, except for the play-in game, where it was Dame, C.J., and Carmelo, where you look at it and you go, whoo, boy, that trio right there, they really got the job done. And, of course, Yusuf Nurkic had the contributions.
20 game or something
Yeah,
that?
Like, he had some big contributions.
Yeah.
So in that last game.
We're on the same page as far as winning the series. I think the Lakers win the series, but I got to see it. I want to see game one and really see, because there's a part of me that I haven't liked how LeBron has looked in this startup, in this restart, in the bubble. You know what I mean? He's looked. I don't want to be disrespectful.
Don't do it.
He's looked a little older. All right, he can't turn that corner just yet. So I don't know if maybe he just needed to get, you know, he needed a ramp up to the playoffs. He really needed that. And, you know, he'll go back to being what he normally is in the playoffs. Or has Father Time actually paid a visit to LeBron James?
Dude, stop it. Absolutely not.
It's paid a visit to his hairline already, but did it catch up to the rest of his body?
He came into the league with that hairline. So that's not an issue. A quick reminder that Grant Cohen is going to join us here on D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320 in 9 minutes. It's final. The Orlando Magic have beaten the Milwaukee Bucks 122-110. Giannis Antetokounmpo went for 31. Middleton 14. Bledsoe 15. I mean, they got solid contributions from their team, but Orlando, they were all about it. Vucevic 35 points today to go along with his 14 rebounds. Four of the five starters were in double figures. Six members of the Orlando Magic were in double figures. A solid performance from that 8 seed right there.
I'm just looking at the box score right now, and one thing really sticks out. You talk about Vucevic with the 35. Brook Lopez on the other side, 5 points, 4 rebounds. 2 of 9 from the field. He's got to – I ain't saying he's got to match him with 30, but 5 and 4. 5 and 4 is not going to get it done.
He's better than that. Mm-hmm. He's better than that. He was what the Milwaukee Bucks should be. And again, we go back to – we're looking at this restart, and we go back to the trend that this season has been in Milwaukee. – You go back to the final week-ish, week and a half of March, and this is what they've been. Mm-hmm. They have been, you know, losing games. They've kind of been up and down here in the restart. This is essentially what they were, you know, that week and a half in March before March 11th thing was shut down. There was a catastrophic injury for the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. There was a catastrophic injury for the San Francisco 49ers. Grant Cohen is going to join us next here on D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320. Grant Cohen of Sports Illustrated set to join us here in just a heartbeat. Dallas Cowboys defensive tackle Gerald McCoy ruptured his right quadriceps tendon during the first padded practice of training camp yesterday, and his season is done.
Oof, that's a bad one. I've heard people not come back from that. Like, that's real bad. Oof.
And at Gerald McCoy, I mean, you were just talking about Father Time, you know, prematurely. I think you're going to have to eat those words tomorrow as regards
to LeBron, by the way. LeBron.
Oh, I know
LeBron's
you do.
My guy.
At some point, it's going to happen. At least we think it is. At some point, it's going to happen. It just doesn't appear to be happening with LeBron James. But we do this. I call it LeBron James-induced panic, where every year, at some point with one of his teams, we're concerned. We're concerned about LeBron James and .. whether it's Cleveland, whether it's Miami, or whether it's the Los Angeles Lakers. But this season was so weird, it never really happened. And normally it happens around the trade deadline. It happens around the All-Star game. That didn't really happen. And then, you know, before you knew it, you know, the season was suspended, and yet here we are. So now we're interjecting the LeBron James-induced panic, and I think he's going to quiet a lot of that noise tonight. We're going to find out. You said you thought Portland was out of gas. I think we're going to find out tonight.
Name, this is must-see TV. Blazers, oh, Lakers, absolutely. Round one. This is must-see TV. I'm excited for this game.
I took a massive, massive left turn as I was talking about Gerald McCoy.
Yeah, we poor were mentioning Gerald McCoy. Sorry.
No, but you brought up his age. And or you brought up coming back from this injury. I brought up his age, thinking, well, maybe this is it for him. Maybe he you know, he had his run in Tampa. He got a couple of decent contracts out of it. I thought this was a great fit for the Dallas Cowboys, but he didn't. And we see this so often. I know I saw an alert something came. I think it was coming out of Baltimore where we saw, you know, we've seen a handful of ACL tears. Obviously, we're talking to Grant Cohn in a minute. We'll bring Grant Cohn on now. The big story coming out of the San Francisco 49ers' first day of practice was the ACL injury to Jalen Hurd. And so we bring in Grant Cohn. Grant, how big of a concern is the wide receiver position for the San Francisco 49ers?
Nope.
All right, we'll hang tight. We'll hang tight on Grant Cohn. We'll get that worked out. No problem. Give us a couple more minutes, and we'll get him on. But this is a tough loss, and this is the concern, obviously, Kenny, with essentially an abbreviated training camp. With you know, and you almost have to use the term like it's training camp, but it's not really training camp. Like, no. We didn't have OTAs, and I know a lot of people roll their eyes at OTAs, but they're, you know, we didn't have mandatory team practices either. You know, you didn't have those gatherings throughout the year that help keep these, or throughout the offseason, I should say, that help keep these guys' bodies loose and help them, perhaps most importantly than anything else, it keeps them around their trainers.
Yeah.
And, you know, that I think that's why we're seeing, you know, now that we're in padded practices, you know, for the first time, I think that's why we're seeing so many injuries.
It's a major concern. It is a major, major concern asking these guys, not to say that they didn't do anything during the, you know, during the lockdown periods and quarantines and things of that nature, because we saw they still got out, but it's not the same. Like you said, being around their trainers, you know, being in certain facilities and, you know, in their same environments, and to ask them to just go from being quarantined essentially to, hey, let's get into training camp and ramp up. Dangerous, man. Real dangerous.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I was listening to Peter King earlier today, and he was talking about, he's in Tampa Bay. He saw we're a month away from the season starting, less than a month away. And Tom Brady huddled with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the first time yesterday.
Wow.
And it's just a wild timeline. So we're going to try to bring Grant Cohn in for the second time again. Grant Cohn of Sports Illustrated. Grant, we were just talking about some of the injuries happening around the NFL. Obviously, one happened to the San Francisco 49ers as well at the wide receiver position. How big of a concern is that position for the 49ers headed into the season? I guess we're 0-2. At what point do we stop swinging at the pitches? Is this the mercy rule?
We're down 0-2. We're down 0-2. We still got a strike.
We got one more we can swing at. We got one more that we can. My biggest concern is, you know, because we're obviously working out some kinks here, my biggest concern is that Grant was actually talking and we just can't hear him in our headphones. I don't think that that's the case, because Jesse in the studio would have told us, but we'll just continue to roll along and talk about football, and we'll swing at that pitch one more time if we got Grant on, and see if we can knock that one out of the park. But I'm concerned, and I have to imagine that people around the league are concerned as well, as they're seeing. And it's a bit, you know, maybe there's a bit hyperbole here, Kenny, talking about, you know, injuries now, because we can point to so many things, right? Mm-hmm. We can point to, well, they didn't have OTAs. We can point to, well, they didn't, you know, they haven't been able to be around their team. Some of these guys, maybe they haven't been able to be around their trainers. Maybe they haven't been able to be around the people that they're normally around. But this isn't terribly rare. It's not terribly uncommon for injuries to happen at the very, very start of training camp.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's something that I'm always leery of during a football training camp. And yeah, it's not normal, but it's getting put under the microscope now because of all the conditions that came around it.
The pitcher is in the windup and the ball is coming over the plate. You're never going to guess what my first question to Grant Cohn is from Sports Illustrated. Grant, we're going to bring you in here, and we're talking about injuries as they pertain to the NFL and obviously the San Francisco 49ers. How much trouble are the 49ers in at the wide receiver position?
Oh, I don't. That's an interesting question. I mean, it's not the strongest position on the team. It's probably the weakest position on the offense. But just because Jalen Hurd went down doesn't mean all hope is lost. I mean, he didn't play last year. I think fans are excited about him because he can play theoretically every position, but he hasn't played at all. So I think what happened was fans lost someone that they could look forward to seeing, but I don't think the team is much different. It's the top three guys are Kendrick Bourne, Trent Taylor, and the rookie Brandon Ayuk. Dante Pettis played well today. They're in the same spot they were in last year where they need some rookies and young guys to step up, and if they don't, they'll probably trade for a vet at the deadline around week 7.
So, Grant, this is Kenny, by the way. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Kenny. How you doing?
I'm good, man. So I was going through your tweets a little while ago, and you mentioned one that really jumped out to me, and it's not the first time you mentioned it during this start of training camp. Dante Pettis, you said he looked really good today, and that goes with you said in the first couple of days that he looked pretty good in his opportunities on those days as well. Do you see something different about Dante Pettis, or is it just more opportunity, or what is it about him that's sticking out?
Yeah, I think it's partially him and partially how the teams handled him compared to last year. Last year, they just said, like, he's our number one wide receiver. He's going to do it. And they brought him in first day of training camp. We're giving him about 5 targets a day, and he just wasn't ready. I don't know if he wasn't in good shape or mentally it was too much pressure for him, but he crumbled under the pressure of it. So this year, they didn't call him the number one wide receiver. They didn't play him with the starters the first 3 days. They just played him with the backups and gave him 1 target, and he made the catch all 3 days. And it's like, I don't know if they were building up his confidence, but they didn't crush it right away. And today he played with the starters, and I've never seen him play so with so much urgency. He showed up one-on-ones. He was running harder. I mean, he's a fast guy, but just so much crisper with his movements. And then during team drills, he made 5 catches, 3 of them over the middle. And I've never seen him really attack a ball over the middle, even in non-contact practices. So it was a whole different Dante Pettis. Great to see.
Grant Cohn with us here, Grant Cohn of Sports Illustrated with us here on ESPN 1320. Grant, I'm a big believer in Jimmy Garoppolo. I believe what he's doing. I believe he is a bit overly criticized. Do you see him? Do you think he'll make a jump in this upcoming season? Or perhaps maybe the better question in this case would be, do you think he'll be able to silence some of that criticism?
It's 2 different questions, because the criticism is going to come one way or another as long as you're making $27 million a year, because you're getting paid to be elite. So being good isn't good enough, even nationally. So that's just going to come with the territory. But for him, I think he can make strides and be better than last year. Remember, last year was his first year off a torn ACL. And that does have a physical effect on any position. And I think with him, we saw it. He didn't have the same type of weight transfer when he threw it. Basically, that just means he didn't have as much zip on the ball. He was using more upper body, arm, wrist, then the full body. Eventually, he should get back to zipping the ball like he did in New England, because he used to throw a real hard fastball. And I think it's more mental than physical right now. His knee is fine. It's more letting it rip with pass rushers around you. He can let it rip in one-on-one drills. So that's part of it. The other part is the deep ball. He hit 2 of them the last couple of days. And the final part is the decision-making. He's gone through 4 days of training camp without turning the ball over once. So those are the 3 ways he can improve, and so far he seems to be improving. That's good.
Yeah, and he's got a couple of new weapons going into this year that he didn't have last year. Number one being the 49ers first-round pick, Brandon Ayuk. And he's turned some heads. I know that was a favorite of yours going into the draft, and it seems like he's living up to everything that you thought he could be thus far. And then Jared McKinnon. A far cry from what we saw from him last training camp. I'm hearing he looks a lot stronger, a lot more confident on that knee, and he seems to be turning some heads right now as well. Do you see Jimmy having a rapport with these guys, and are they really living up to the billing of what a lot of people thought they could be?
Well, Ayuk looks like a rookie. I'm not sure that he's going to be dominant the first couple of months of the season, because he's a little inconsistent. Like today, he messed up a screen pass. The timing was a little off. And I think it's not a bad sign. It just reminds you that he's a rookie. The way he has impressed so far is it's clear he's extremely athletic. I mean, he's faster than Dante Pettis, stronger than Dante Pettis, more explosive. I don't think really any of the Niners cornerbacks can cover him man-to-man for more than a couple of seconds. That being said, he's still a rookie who makes rookie mistakes. So he's promising, but right now the most consistent receivers on the team are Kendrick Bourne and Trent Taylor. I think they're going to use Ayuk more as like the gadget guy early on, running jet sweeps, end arounds, things like that. And then Jared McKinnon, he's been great so far in practice. Like, he has all the quickness he used to have, which is surprising. I didn't think he would be able to regain all of it. He's so hard to cover one-on-one in those one-on-one drills. None of the Niners linebackers can cover him. But for him, what I'd like to see just make it through an entire training camp without getting hurt? Because he looked good in 2018, and then he hurt his ACL. Same thing with Trent Taylor. Can you make it through 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks? That's the question, because right now they're great when they're healthy.
Grant, what's the 49ers' biggest weakness?
Mm-hmm. I believe it's their secondary. I think it got exposed a little bit in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. They had the number one pass rush, number one pass defense in the league last year. But it's mostly a product of their amazing pass rush. Not just the front four guys, but the backups too. They just had wave after wave of pass rushers. But as the season went on, some of those guys got hurt, Dee Ford, Ronald Blair, and it really became Buckner, Bosa, Armstead. And once those guys would get tired in the fourth quarter, we would see teams, especially with mobile quarterbacks, start to shred that pass defense. The Chiefs did it. So I think they haven't added anyone to the defensive backfield. The same guys as last year. They're counting on Javon Kinlaw and Dee Ford to supercharge the pass rush and offset whatever deficiencies they have back there. But when they come across a quarterback like Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes or anyone who's mobile who can buy a little bit of time, those are the guys who feast on those corners in particular. I think the safeties are fine. The corners in particular. So the Niners still should be a top-five team, but to win the Super Bowl, that may be the reason that they don't, if they don't. And I think it was a reason they didn't last year.
I'm hearing a lot about we talked about their weakness right there with the secondary, and I agree with you. I think that there's one spot that concerns me. It is that secondary. Specifically, you know, what's going on with Richard Sherman, if, you know, he loses any more steps or anything like that due to Father Time. That's kind of been the theme of the day today, Father Time. But let's talk about the strength, because I heard they really flexed their muscle once these pads came on, and I'm talking about that defensive line. I heard Dee Ford is looking like he's all the way healthy. I heard DJ Jones is out there looking spectacular. Nick Bosa is looking like he's ready to take it up a whole nother notch. That defensive line, losing DeForest Buckner, and Armstead hasn't been out there just yet, but are they looking as potent as they were last year?
No, not as potent as last year, but remember, Armstead's not out there, and that's a big deal. When he comes back, presumably the day after tomorrow, they should look a lot like they looked last year. But right now, no Buckner, no Armstead, 2'6", 7" guys who are on the field. And those guys, just by being tall, gave Jimmy Garoppolo all kind of problems last year. This year, you got Nick Bosa and Dee Ford coming off the edge, and both guys are having great camps. But in the middle, you got DJ Jones, who's coming off a broken ankle and is a little out of shape, but he's still good. He's taking him some time. And then you got Javon Kinlaw. So Kinlaw's interesting because he's probably the exact opposite of DeForest Buckner. He's a lot like Armstead. Extremely powerful, very, very powerful. But he doesn't have two pass rush moves. He has a bull rush. And it's because I'm sure in his life he's never encountered an offensive lineman he couldn't just push around. Now you're in the NFL, and Laken Tomlinson, for example, the Niners left guard, is not going to let you push him around. He's just as strong as you are, if not stronger. So it's the beginning of a learning process for a bit of a project. Very, very talented guy, but I don't think he's going to be a productive pass rusher until he adds a couple of moves to his arsenal. And I mean, that was in his scouting report anyway. The Niners know what they got, and they like his size and his power. He's going to be a good run defender, but he's a bit of a project like Armstead. He's not just going to, like, dominate as a pass rusher like Buckner did earlier, because Buckner had all the moves. He had counters on counters on counters coming out of college.
Grant Cohn of Sports Illustrated. Is there a more loaded division right now in football than the NFC West? I mean, you got the emergence of Arizona with DeAndre Hopkins now and Kyler Murray. You look at what Seattle did last year, obviously the San Francisco 49ers being in the Super Bowl, and then you've got the Rams kind of lingering around. It seems like it could be the most competitive division in the league.
There's no question. I mean, you could actually fathom a scenario where the Niners finish last place in the NFC West. And have
don't play like that, Grant. Don't play.
Sorry. What I'm saying is, whoever finishes last in this division could be a good team. It could be the Rams. It could be Arizona. It could be Seattle. It could be any one of those four. I think all four of them are good teams. Even the Rams, like, everyone talks about them like they're nothing now. They went 9-7 last year and would have made the playoffs under the current playoff format. So you can't write them off. They still have an excellent coach. And I think Arizona, I think they might really own this division in a year or two. Like, they're right on the cusp. They kind of remind me of the Niners in 2018. So yeah, I totally agree. It's the toughest division in football, and 11 wins might win it just because all these teams have to face each other, and 8 wins might come in last, which is crazy.
Wow.
Grant, wow. You're right there on the ground floor here in the first COVID training camp that we've experienced. How's the vibe? How is that? Like, what is that like out there? You know what I mean? Right now, it seems a little bizarre, but is it a huge difference, or what's going on out there?
It's a great question. From my perspective, when I watch them practice, I forget that there's a pandemic. They're playing football. They're running into each other. Very few people are wearing masks. The coaches are wearing masks. They're being responsible. But for like an hour, I forget that the world has you know, gone to hell in a handbasket. It seems normal. But then I remember, like, I'm not allowed to move around on the sideline. All the media are confined to a specific spot. All the access is so much worse. You can't talk to players face-to-face. Everything's on Zoom. So when it's actually time to do like the coverage, it's so apparent that this year is way different. And it's kind of tough to cover the team. I mean, some days they do practice, like, it feels like a mile and a half away. So, I mean, they're on like a far field with players in between, and they say we can't go over there because for our safety, right? So that's when it's like a little tough, and you miss the good old days. But still, it's good to see that the players are actually doing training camp, and it seems like a season's going to happen. That's good.
Yeah. Awesome to talk with you, Grant. Hopefully we can make this a more regular thing, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Grant Cohen there, Sports Illustrated, giving us some news and notes from San Francisco 49ers practice. If you missed any single solitary second of that interview, just download the radio.com app, search ESPN 1320, hit the heart button, and use the rewind feature. Even if you tuned in late, we go straight DVR style. You could just skip back to the very beginning of that interview, listen to it, and you won't miss a single solitary minute. And don't get it twisted. We're not going anywhere. We're with you for another 20 minutes. We're not going anywhere. We still got plenty more to talk about. But that was a great question, Kenny, that you had to end the conversation there with Grant Cohen. As I was thinking, gosh, like, what is it like, you know, for those guys? Things are different, and sometimes, you know, we go through moments. Obviously, you and I were doing a radio show together on a radio station that's airing across our city. It's airing across the world on it, but we're at home. We're not in this high-tech radio station. We've got all of these different devices set up, and, you know, we've got all of these screens in front of us, and we're trying to communicate with each other. We're trying to see each other. Even in those moments, we forget the world is different right now. Yeah. And I thought that was great perspective from Grant. It's like, yeah, no, you're watching football, and then you realize you can't move. And if you've ever been to a training camp, you realize media members are they're walking all over the place. There are very few areas at training camps, you know, that are blocked off. And there are some at particular times that you can't go past a certain area, but you're seeing a lot of guys like walk and talk and, you know, get, you know, quotes from different people. But, you know, hearing Grant talk about, yeah, no, you don't move. And when you're watching football, you realize, hey, we're watching football. This is great. And then you realize, oh, okay, wait a minute. There's still some precautions we've got to take here.
Yeah. And it's kind of a microcosm of everything that, you know, we as fans have had to go through in the last couple of weeks. Because I know, you know, when I'm watching a basketball game or even baseball for that matter, when I'm watching the play, I'm like, this is it. This is the sport that I watch. And then they pan to, you know, a different camera angle. And I'm like, oh, they're in a bubble. They're in a deserted Walt Disney World gym, or, you know, somebody hits a foul ball in baseball and it's 30,000 empty seats. And it's like, oh yeah, that's right. So, you know, the game,
for some baseball teams, that's pretty normal.
I mean, you're not going to get me to take a shot at the Oakland A's. You're just not going to get me to do it. Okay.
I wouldn't ask you to do that.
Because it was right there. You know, you teed it up. It was Lob City right there. And I almost took it, but I didn't take it.
Maybe that's why Oakland was so home at Oracle this weekend. there's a shot at the San Francisco Giants as Kenny and I go one-on-one. We're going to go over a couple of different stories. We actually got a lot to get to here in the next 20 minutes or so. So let's start with Coach K. Kenny, Coach K was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin right here on ESPN Radio this morning. I want to play the clip. I heard this, and I was like, oh, This is notable. This is a story. Here's Coach K.
The thing that the NCAA is most concerned about, because men's college basketball in the tournament pays for something like 98% of the – it produces 98% or more of the money for the NCAA, not college football or any other sport. So, we need to have the tournament. We can't have it where 2 years in a row you do not have the NCAA tournament. And, guys, I think that's where you should start, is make sure we have the tournament. Doesn't make any difference when it is. because we don't even know when the NBA season is going to be next year. And we should look at them to see how they navigate the waters, you know, going forward. They've navigated it really well with the bubble, and they do have. They don't have the NBA. They have Adam Silver, and that's what I'm saying is what we really need in college basketball.
Coach K, the definitive voice. Now, again, that was Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. They also had John Calipari on, and he was talking about a potential bubble idea that the NBA and the WNBA have done. But you heard from Coach K, arguably those two, the most definitive voices in college basketball. Do you, Kenny Caraway, think we have an NCAA tournament this year?
Whew, that's a tough one. That really is a tough one, because if you would have asked me even 2 months ago, I'd be like, yeah, we'll be fine by then and we'll have an NCAA tournament. Not much has changed from March. You know what I'm saying? Like when everything got stopped. And to sit here and think that, you know, with nothing changing over the last 5 months, and just assume that in another 5, 6, 7, 8 months that it's going to change and we'll have an NCAA tournament again, I can't do that. And I really don't think, if you have to ask me, I don't think we're going to have an NCAA tournament. I really don't. Because I'm not sure what NCAA basketball season is even going to look like if it happens. The NCAA was, in my opinion, I don't want to be drastic, but I feel like they were already on life support, especially basketball, right? Because the NBA had, you know, just unveiled this, you know, this program for kids that want to come straight out of high school.
And the G League. The modified G League.
And I felt like that was going to blow college basketball out of the water. It's not going to go away because there's guys, not every guy is, you know, the number one player in their class, right? So there's still going to be guys that want to go to college and play college basketball, but it was not going to be like it was. And then you combine that with this situation where some guys might just opt out. Like if they're, you know, just like we're seeing in football, if a guy is a prospect and has a possibility of going to the league, regardless if he plays or not, why play for free? You know what I'm saying? Why am I doing that? So, yeah, I think there's a real possibility that we don't see an NCAA tournament, and it gets really murky for the NCAA as a whole if this thing drags out into next March, as far as not being able to have fans, football, and basketball.
We spent some time talking about baseball and its dated concepts earlier. Perhaps there's no organization more dated in all of sports than the NCAA, and when it pertains to NCAA basketball, and again, you can't look past the fact that Mike Krzyzewski is the definitive voice, the coach of Duke basketball. He's the definitive voice when it comes to, you know, college basketball in this country. John Calipari is right behind him. If he's pushing to get some form of an NCAA tournament done, there's weight behind that, just as Nick Saban is pushing for some form of, you know, a season to take place. Now, Nick Saban, to his credit, is doing a little bit more pleading. And granted, we only played a soundbite of Coach K. I don't know, you know, what else he was saying. I've heard Nick Saban say things like, can y'all put your mask on? Can y'all, you know, keep each other safe so we can get this, you know, so we can get this college football season going? But when you have big voices like that speaking for something, there's going to be weight behind it. But you bring up an interesting point, and it's the power that the NCAA is losing over these collegiate athletes who are now looking at, you know, whether it's the G League as a potential prospect. We've seen a handful of players do the overseas gimmick as a potential alternative. And then, you know, you have the Rich Paul effect, who got, Under Armour? I think it was an Under Armour, like internship. Yeah. Slash endorsement, where they just played for an athlete's training instead of them going to college for a year. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's pluses and minuses to both. Obviously, a big plus is you skip all of that stuff. You go to the G League, or you get one of those, you know, athletic internships that Rich Paul hooked up, and you're getting paid. Right. Massive plus. But if you're talking from a basketball perspective and you're one of those top-tier athletes and you have the opportunity, how many coaches in the NBA are better than Coach K? You know, how many coaches on the planet are better than Coach K? So if you got the opportunity to learn from him, I think it's a tough thing to turn down. I think when we lose Coach K to retirement, and I mean we, the college basketball fans, I think when we lose Coach K to retirement, that could very well, like, kind of be the that could be the final kick over the edge of the cliff that you were talking about right there, where we may lose what the NCAA is. I think there's a possibility of a tournament. I think that three of the five power conferences are talking about playing football right now. It's just mind-boggling. I mean, we're talking conference championships and national championships. We're talking, you're hearing coaches say, no, of course, just because two entire conferences sat out, that's not going to diminish the championship. We're going to go out there and try to win. The fact that those types of things are happening, and we're talking these things are happening in weeks. Like right. The college football season, it's not months away. It's
the schedule's
weeks.
Out and everything. Like, yeah, we're playing here week one.
It's weeks away. If Coach K is pushing for an NCAA tournament to happen, I'm inclined to believe that an NCAA tournament is going to happen.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that.
And maybe it's in the bubble format that Coach Cal spoke to the guys with this morning here on ESPN 1320.
The other thing, so, and we'll get to the next one too, but I wanted to say on that, the other thing about the bubble in college sports is, like, in the pros, you talk about a bubble and you talk about going into the bubble, you know, let's be real here. It's because that bag is at stake. I got to go get that bag. You know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't what I want to do, but, you know, there's millions on the line. I need to go get that. If I'm a college kid, or if I'm the parent of a college kid, why would I go to a bubble? For what? You know what I'm saying? Like, just because I want to play and all this other stuff, like, nah, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm going to be separated from my family and my loved ones and all this other stuff for months on end. For what?
You realize we have been talking about this for about 6 minutes. We heard about 60 seconds of Coach K, and neither one of us have once mentioned class, academics. Neither one of us have once used the term student athlete, because aren't these kids supposed to be going to school? Isn't that what this is all about? Like, student
supposed
first,
to be, yes.
Athlete second, right? I think the first step in getting an NCAA tournament done would be for the NCAA, the heads of the Power Five conferences, and top coaches like Nick Saban, like Coach K, and it's far more prevalent in college basketball than it is college football, but you just step up and say, hey, okay, you got us. We are full of crap. These individuals are athletes. That's what they are. That's why we're here. That's why we have been following them since they were 13 freaking years old. Not because we think they're going to be standing citizens for our university. It's because we believe they are going to help our program win. But they refuse to acknowledge that. Because every time, you remember the argument for not expanding the college football playoff? You remember the argument for not getting, the original argument for not getting rid of the BCS was,
we cut in the finals and they've got to go to class.
Bang. Like, come on, man. The NCAA is just they're the ultimate hypocrites.
The 100%.
Ultimate hypocrites.
100%. Next on the list, this one's, we're going to get right to it because not a lot to say here. Dez Bryant, your man's,
Dez Bryant.
He worked out with the Baltimore Ravens yesterday, and apparently he may have other workouts lined up and other teams are showing interest. And
okay.
Dez is trying to show that he's still got it here. Damien, does Dez Bryant find a team this year? Is he back in the NFL this year? Is he throwing up the X this year?
Oh, my heart is screaming yes, yes, yes. Full Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30 style. But he has not played in like 3 years. He's 31 years old. You know, I look around and I go, I was rooting so hard for him when he got that gig in New Orleans. I was so excited for him. I was gutted when the news came that he had torn his Achilles. And, you know, the fact that he's out there working out with Baltimore, I had a stat that I told you before the show. I don't think Lamar Jackson has a receiver over the age of 27 right now.
Wow.
I don't know what that means, but it's an interesting stat.
It's a like good he, and he, bad thing.
I guess so. If the Ravens, if the Seahawks are looking for a third, fourth receiver, you know, the Seahawks, I think the Ravens have quietly flirted with Antonio Brown. Mm. The Seahawks have very publicly flirted with Antonio Brown. If you're looking for a receiver, you know, I don't know where Antonio Brown fits on either of those rosters, but if you're looking for a, you know, depth chart receiver, yeah, I really hope Dez Bryant gets the opportunity to play football. The fact that Dez Bryant hasn't played in 3 years and only one of them was because of injury is just mind-blowing to me. I know people had their criticisms of Dez Bryant. Dude, he is not trash. No. Dez Bryant is not a trash receiver, and the fact that he's been out of the league so long is something, again, with the exception of the year he was injured with New Orleans, it's something that's difficult to wrap my head around.
And look, we touched on it a little bit. I can't remember if it was yesterday or on our show, that our trial show, but I mean, San Francisco. I don't see why you would not bring in Dez Bryant, at least for a workout, to see what he has. Also considering the fact that I feel like Dez, while he is not who he used to be by any means, he's still a receiver that the Niners don't have. They have a lot of smaller, quick, like Brandon Ayuk type guys, right? They don't have a big target for, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo or somebody in the red zone that you could throw a jump ball to and he can go get that thing. While he's not, like I said, who he was in his prime, where he was just a beast, like a mini T.O., you know, he can run and he could go get that thing. He's not that. They need a red zone target. And just send him on a quick little fade. If you're down there on the 5 yard line, throw that jump ball. Dez can go fight for it. I think for that alone, he should be somebody that you consider. Haven't heard much about that. I doubt it's going to happen, but I would love to see him come down and get a workout with the 49ers.
After that conversation with Grant Cohen, I don't think that's, you know, we had fun with that in our, I think we even talked about it on Instagram Live, which we do each day before the show. So make sure you follow us. I know I've been telling you to follow us on Twitter. It's a great way to interact with us throughout the show at D'Lo and KC. It's the same exact handle for Instagram. We'll be posting videos each day. We'll be going live each day and kind of giving you a preview of what the show is going to be. And I've promised we are going to be the most interactive and most accessible radio show in this market or in this country, man. I promise you, we're going to do something special here on ESPN 1320. Now, in the excitement of yesterday's show, I forgot that we had promised, you know, in sports media, it's often negative, negative, negative. We were talking about baseball, how we haven't had a positive baseball story all year. And the most that we've talked about him this year, we've talked about Gabe Kepler's mess up. We talked about that poor relief pitcher, perhaps former relief pitcher for the San Francisco Giants, you know, and now we talk about the unwritten rules. Like, we're talking about negative, 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 negative. And one thing I really wanted to make sure we do is talk about something that we love in sports and ending each day with something that we absolutely love. And in all of the excitement yesterday, I left that segment out. And I think it's important to kind of go back because this is a two-part story. And you have heard about this before if you've been following sports in any way, shape, or form. Whether it be on social media or on your television, it's the Alex Smith story. I love the Alex Smith being cleared. You know, he was cleared by his doctor, and I thought this is just phenomenal. He was cleared by the Washington football team to resume practice. He's been cleared to resume football activity, and I'm like, this is just phenomenal. I love everything about this. And now that we've got that, like, this is what I love about sports. Anybody who watched that E60 report cannot walk away from seeing Alex Smith celebrating with his wife and celebrating with his kids and feel anything but fantastic. Mm-hmm. That was, if you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go out of your way to see it. And I also encourage you to express, like, beware. Like, viewer discretion is advised. It is incredibly graphic, and it is stomach-turning. And to realize this dude whose leg looked like that has been cleared to go play football is phenomenal. Now, with all of that said, that's what I love about sports. The only thing that would make me love this more is if Alex Smith said, awesome, I did it, I'm out.
Thank you.
I do not want Alex Smith to play another down of football.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's a great story. It is a great story. All that stuff I won't watch because I am that person that's, you know, if you're squeamish, turn your head. That's me. I'm turning my head every time. But the story itself, man, Alex seems like a great guy, like a great guy. And I'm glad to see him even get this opportunity again. That's the most important thing. So definitely shout out to Alex Smith. My thing, why I love sports, I'm a big boxing fan, Damian. And over the weekend, Jessica McCaskill, She defeated future Hall of Famer Cecilia Brakes to become the WBA, WBC, IBF, and WBO welterweight champion of the world. That's not the story, right?
That sounded like an eye chart. That right. sounded like something you just read at the DMV. But go ahead.
That's not the story. Cecilia Brakes, she was attempting to surpass Joe Louis for the all-time record of 25 consecutive successful title defenses in winning this fight, right? That was the thing. So it was a huge David versus Goliath type of situation. That's not the story. The story is that Jessica is not only the welterweight champion of the world, but she is a full-time investment banker. Jessica might be listening to D'Lo and Casey right now at work.
That's what's up.
What she did is she kept her dream alive of being a world champion, and she worked hard at it and continued to do it. And lo and behold, she was actually homeless in the fourth grade, and she just kept fighting, literally and figuratively, and now she's the world champion. So that was great to see. Big ups to her, man.
At D'Lo and KC on Twitter, at D'Lo and KC on Instagram, at ESPN 1320 on both of those platforms. If you missed any single solitary second of today's show, download the radio.com app. You can listen on the rewind feature. You can listen in the podcast feature. I cannot express this enough. Download that app. That is going to be your key to this program. Download the radio.com app, search ESPN 1320, hit the heart, and you'll be able to listen to anything that you missed today. And of course, you'll be able to tune in tomorrow. We appreciate you so much for being with us here. Damon Radowinkowski are coming up next here on ESPN 1320.